This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And today I have in the studio with me Rita Moreau, and we're going to be talking about the fourth in her series of absolutely delightful cozy mysteries. And the new book is called The House on Zinnia. Hi, Rita.
Hi, Patsy, and thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's a joy that you're here. But first, and we're going to talk to you at the bottom of the hour, because first I am going to talk to an author who is absolutely amazing. I am just blown away by this new, I can't believe it's his first book. Richard Kirschenbaum has written a novel that is it's so good. I couldn't put it down, and I just want everyone to read it, because it is a hoot. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
Well,
a pleasure.
It's exciting. I feel like I'm at the birth of a brilliant new author who's going to just blow the world away with his writing. This book is so much fun.
Well, thank you so much. I had so much fun writing it, too.
Well, it's called Rouge. First of all, the book, the cover is absolutely beautiful. I love whoever designed this cover, really got into the mood of this book. And Rouge is a story of the fashion industry, of two sort of warring women. But you have captured them so beautifully, and it's so exciting. When I started this book, I never actually, you know, read in advance about what a book is going to be. So I just start, I don't even actually look at the cover, I don't look at the picture of the author, I don't want to know anything, I just want to read the book. And so I'm starting, and I'm reading the prologue, and I'm thinking, this is an interesting concept. And then I love the prologue, and I love the epilogue. Like, right there, we've got the prologue and the epilogue. That's like a novel in and of itself. And then,
well, thank you so much.
And it was so good. And then when we start the book, and it's set back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, I'm thinking, wow, you have such an eye. You are so descriptive. You're so observant. It's brilliant.
Well, thank you. That's the highest compliment coming from you, and I so appreciate it, because you read so much.
I do, and when I get a book like this, first of all, of course, it is a book where you do want to have a martini or a drink or something, and you want to learn all about. You've captured everything in here. It's sort of a Jacqueline Susan kind of. There's cattiness, but you have really, really great history, and there's this little mystery always going through that we don't know what the end result is. So you've got everything in this book. So tell us about your characters and how you came out with the idea, because I think it's fantastic.
Well, thank you. So Rouge is really the story of the women entrepreneurs who founded the first female owned category, the cosmetics industry, and the first multi-billion-dollar category at a time when women couldn't get loans. And so I thought, I could not believe that a novel really had not been written about the industry. Advertising man, an ad man, and I've run some of the world's largest cosmetics accounts, from everything from Avon to Revlon, and everything in between, like Jergens and John Frieda and Biore and things like that. So I've had the opportunity to work with those categories and work for some of the iconic women in the world, and I decided that, you know, the time was right now to do a novel that was really going to, you know, showcase this incredible category that is really, you know, world famous, but no one really knows about. So since I ran those accounts, I sort of, they say, write what you know. So I wrote it.
And boy, do you know it. And the characters are, it's so funny. As I'm reading the characters, first of all, your main character is Josephine Hart.
Yes.
And my mother-in-law is a tiny little Polish woman, very stylish. And so when I was reading about Josephine, I thought, oh, I had, you know, the image of my mother-in-law, who is exactly like that. And she was also a businesswoman. She started her own business back in those days when nobody else was doing it. And so it's fascinating how you really created this character who is so believable and so real.
Well, thank you. The characters are really based also on the women and some men who founded the cosmetics industry. There's so many of them, and, you know, from Elizabeth Arden to Helena Rubinstein and Estee Lauder and Charles Revson and people like that, and Madam C.J. Walker, of course, who is the first African-American female millionaire. And so the character of Cece is somewhat based on her. But it's based on novel, and I really wanted to create a novel about, you know, not only about rivalry and romance and sex and juicy and all that kind of stuff, but I really wanted people to really understand the cosmetics industry and is the way I saw it and the way that I've lived it. And so it was so much fun to write. And there, of course, is the amazing rivalry between Constance Gardner, who's the blonde ice queen, belle of New York and Palm Beach society, and then Josephine Herz, Nay Herzenstein, who's a Polish-Jewish emigre, and comes to the United States, and they have they're in the race for the world's first mass market mascara, which includes sex, drugs, and murder. So it's sort of, you know, but it was so fun to be able to write it. And the one thing I will tell your audience is that I learned a great lesson in writing the book, which is when you develop really strong characters, the characters write the book. And so, you know, once the characters started, you know, coming into their own, I mean, the decisions that they make are the decisions that drove the plot line.
Well, I just love all of the characters, and I wanted to particularly mention Cece because, as you said, she is based on a very famous woman, who African American woman who was quite amazing, and as a someone who is in advertising like you are, she was so innovative. She had such brilliant ideas way before anybody else.
Yes. Yes. And you know, it's interesting because, you know, when early in my career I handled an account called Cream of Nature, which is a hair relaxer business. And I sat in focus groups all over the country with African American women and listened to, you know, how they would describe the sisterhood of having their hair done. And all of this added up to coming out with the reality of what, you know, the characters had to go through and had to face at the time. And there was, of course, you know, racism and, you know, discrimination and gender inequality and anti-Semitism. And, you know, the 20th century is, is marvelous, but in some ways it was also, you know, very, very difficult for people. And I really wanted, you know, the reader to really understand what these women had to go through and what they triumphed over and how they lived their life and loves. And, you know, many of the really successful women were not very successful in their personal lives, and it took a toll on their personal lives. And I wanted the audience to really understand that.
Well, that comes through. And one of the things, I'm so intrigued with your writing because you have a wonderful way with dialogue. It reminds me, actually, of the 1930s dialogue in films because your dialogue serves a purpose. It's fast-paced, and it tells a story. You know, so often I get bogged down in people's dialogue. It doesn't really lead to that much. But your dialogue is very clever and very fast-paced. I love it.
Well, thank Thank you so much. And it's really something that, you know, I'm sort of always been inspired by, you know, Nick and Nora and, you know, the movies of the 30s. And also, you know, the great authors. I mean, Judith Krantz just passed away yesterday. She, you know, 91, may she rest in peace. I mean, the woman sold 80 million books. And, you know, when I was growing up, I read those books. I read, you know, Sidney Sheldon. I read Dominic Dunn. I read Judith Krantz and Jacqueline Suzanne. And they were not writing books that much anymore like that. And I really wanted a book that you could not put down. And so, you know, the dialogue, you know, needed to be sharp and witty. And you know, it caught the eye of the legendary movie producer who won an Academy Award, Wendy Fineman, who did it, Forrest Gump and The Devil Wears Prada, and she optioned it and sold it to Sony as a movie. So, you know, it is cinematic, and I think the dialogue did, you know, thank you for saying that, but I do think they saw a movie in it.
Well, I saw a movie, and I used to write scripts. So that's, I always look at a book in terms of if I would want to write a script for it. And as I'm reading this, I'm thinking, this dialogue is fantastic. It doesn't happen to me very often where I get a book. And it's funny that you mentioned Nick and Nora, because I had that image too in my head as I'm reading. And I would read your dialogue, and then, you know, like 10 pages later, I'd go back and I'd read it again. And I'd say, wow, he cannot be a first-time novelist. I'm thinking, okay, is this some very, very, you know, novelist who's, you know, written 100 books and has now gotten this ability to write like this? It's, where did this come from?
Well, I started out as a comedy writer for people like Joan Rivers, but I was getting paid $8 a joke. I wasn't going to really able to afford, you know, to, you know, you know, pay my bills on $8 a joke. So I went into the advertising business, and I became an advertising copywriter, and over the years, you know, then started my own agency and ran all these accounts. You know, I think when you're in the advertising business, you have to be quick, and you have to be sharp, and you have to, you know, you have to get your ideas out in time. I was very, very blessed and quite fortunate, and this is truly amazing, that my creative director who hired me at J. Walter Thompson was none other than James Patterson before he became the world's most famous novelist. And James really understood the power of, you know, an edited chapter that's not too long. You know, I think people overwrite sometimes, and so, you know, you want to move the reader through the book. And I think that's really important. And so, you know, I also think that, you know, the stories, the Bible stories, I have to tell you this, are also incredibly well written. You know, they take you quickly through, you know, when you read the story, like let's say you read the story of Joseph and his brothers, right? When you read that story, it's religion, but it happens in it's so beautifully told, and it's told. And when I read everything, I feel, wow, you're really transported back in time, and you really can see it visually. And it also allows you to, you know, it tells the story, but in, you know, it doesn't take a long time to tell the story. And that's what's amazing. So I've learned from everything. I've learned from, you know, I've learned from reading great authors. I've learned from religion. I've learned through listening to great, you know, rock contours. You know, my mother, my late mother, may she rest in peace, was very witty. And the character of Marilyn in the book is based on her. She, you know, in terms of her wit, because she was very, you know, remember Maude, you know, the show, the TV show Maude, you know, and she, you know, had those quips. That was very similar to my mother's personality. So, you know, she's very acerbic. And so I've learned, you know, over the years to sort of listen to people and to be able to, you know, internalize everything.
Well, you did it, because, as I said, when I don't see this very often, where I get a book where I have the dialogue, and the dialogue is what grabs you. Sometimes, you know, it's all the descriptions and everything that put us in a place and a time are fantastic. But when dialogue is so good, it's almost breathtaking, especially for somebody like me who, you know, I read a lot. And I'm a visual person, so I can see them talking. I can see the action. There's action in your dialogue, which is so much fun.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Thank you so much for saying that, and I really appreciate that. You know, I also like to visualize a person. You know, my grandfather, who was a New York City policeman, you know, he was from the generation of, you know, Frank Sinatra. Like, you know, women were called...
No. Oh, no. Okay, we have a problem.
With
little
so
gremlins, we're going to get him back here. Just when we're having so much fun, and I'm fascinated. Rita, isn't he fascinating?
Very fascinating.
I'm holding up his book. It's called Rouge, and we have to get him back because he is so wonderful. I'm just like I'm just blown away with the story. First of all, it's just a fun book from the point of view of, you know, just New York society and all the cattiness and sort of the. You know.
Yeah, and I love it that you mentioned it's from the 1930s, you know, an era gone by, but very interesting to me.
It is. It's fascinating. And so I was so thrilled the minute I started, as I said, I read the prologue and then, this is an intriguing idea. And then when I got into the story and discovered all of the characters that he has developed so beautifully, it's really exciting. And he is back. And now I can. Okay. Rita is here in the studio with me and she's going, yay. We're so happy.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well, these things happen on live radio. It's so funny. But I don't know if you heard, I'm calling you brilliant all the time, but you were telling us about your father.
Yes. I mean, I think that, is it to me or is it to Rita?
Well, no, to me, you.
Frank
Sinatra. Well, that era.
Yeah, that was my grandfather. So my grandfather was a New York City policeman, and he spoke, like out of the world of the 1930s. And I think that, you know, I really needed to sort of, when I was visualizing all the characters, because I'm writing female characters and I'm writing male characters and I'm writing, you know, the characters during the 1930s. And so, you know, what you really try to do is make it as authentic as possible. So that was, you know, really important for me to be able to make it as authentic as possible.
Well, you reached your objective because the dialogue, as I said, when we went back into the 20s, the 30s, and particularly, I love that 30s era in general, and that you capture it so beautifully. I was so impressed with your writing.
Well, you know, you're so incredibly kind, because it's as a first-time novelist. You know, I'll tell you, I had a very lucky thing happen to me when I had this column in the New York Observer that I was writing, and one day I get a call from Liz Smith, the famous Liz Smith, and she, you know, said to me, and I didn't know her, and she said, you know, I really would like to get to know you. She was the famous PR woman, you know, she had a column for many years in New York. She was legendary, and she said, come meet me for lunch, but hurry up, I'm 92. So I met her, and, you know, she said to me, Richard, she said, I love your social observation. She said, you know, there are many people like Truman Capote and Dominic Dunn, and she said, and you have the chops. She said, just don't write names, because they both, you know, Truman got kicked out of New York society. So Liz really supported me, and I was a love affair. I was just so lucky to know her, and she supported me at that period of my juncture in my career. And that was one of the reasons why I believe I got the book contract, because she was so legendary and she really supported me. And so, you know, I also think that, you know, it allowed me to hone my craft a little bit, you know, doing this weekly, you know, column. And so I was really thrilled about that, you know, and just to have the support of people like someone like Liz Smith, who, you know, has seen it all and knew all the famous authors in her day. And for her to sort of pass the mantle on to me was an incredible thing.
Well, she recognized the talent because, as I said, I read that prologue. And I've gone back to like two or three times, well, three times actually, to read it again. When sometimes prologues are a waste of time. That's true. I've had some prologues that I just forget it. But wow, your prologue is so good. You introduce a character there, Bobby DeVries, that is so real. I mean, I was like, I wanted to know more about him. It was just, it's just so well done. And in a few pages, you tell this story and bring us into this book in such an intriguing way. I love it.
Well, thank you so much. You know, the thought of starting off at a funeral, you know, in New York, of the world's richest woman, and as told by her butler, who is, you know, part of the family, and, you know, and describes the funeral and the sort of the rivalry and what happens at the beginning, it seemed very cinematic and a great way to set up the book in a certain sense, you know, and the rivalry between the two women, and one, you know, the one character, Constance, coming to sort of relish that she had, you know, she will show, even in, you know, as I like to say, even their longevity was competitive. So she's, you know, assessing the runes of this woman's life. And then she's, you know, but in the end, Josephine is so smart that she triumphs even at the funeral. And
know,
I won't give that too much away, but...
No, don't give too much away, but it is such a... It is... I think, you know, people are going to be studying that prologue in writing classes from now on. They're going to...
Well, you're so sweet. I have news for you. I wrote the prologue in a half an hour, and I have to tell you why. I go into a trance when I'm writing, and it just came to me. It was sort of like otherworldly, you know? And I always say that, you know, when things come quickly to me, they're good. When things are, when I have to labor over them, they're not so good. So, you know, the moment I had this thought, you know, I went into sort of a trance, you know, and then it just appeared. It was kind of funny. So that's always been sort of for me. And again, everyone's very different, but for me, it's the mark of I know whether something's good or not.
Well, I think I went into a trance when I read it. I'm reading it. And you know, all I knew about you was that you were a first-time novelist, and I'm reading. And I kept, and then part of me is I'm in a trance. I can't get out of it. I mean, I see it. It's so visual. It is so good. And that's why when I first said about the fashion, because in the funeral is about fashion. The funeral is about yeah. And we don't know what's going to the story's about, and it is. It just sucks you in. It's a brilliant prologue, just brilliant.
Well, thank you. You know, it's very funny because I live in New York City, and we always like to say that, you know, people work the room at a good funeral. I mean, I hate to say that, but New York, it's a very part of, like, New York, you know, like somebody really famous dies, and then, like, you know, the climbers all come, you know, and they try to, you know, see who's there, and, you know, I mean, it's actually quite funny, but it's not untrue, and I would say that, you know, that's something that I've observed as well. So look, a little bit of a, you know, that's where the reality comes into play of like living this life in a certain sense, you know, where you know people's motivations and, you know, you see what really happens. And so, you know, I thought people might see the humor in that as well, because there is humor in it, you know?
Oh, there's humor in it. And the thing is, the prologue builds up enough of a little mystery suspense in there because we want to know what's going to happen at the end. So we have to read the whole book. It just flows so beautifully. And as I said, I love the history part of it. You bring in so much, and even little bits of dialogue, like when Cece and Mickey. Over the peaches, just little things like that. That dialogue again is so good, and it tells so much in, and it's so clever. I get such a kick out of this book.
Well, thank you. You know, I mean, I really had fun writing so much of it. I mean, there were some parts of the book that were difficult to write. You know, when you're writing about, you know, racism or.
Oh, yeah.
You know, discrimination, you know, it's hard when you're going back in time and you're really, you know, thinking about what really occurred, you know, and it's hard, it's painful, you know, and I felt that pain too. At the same time, you know, there's this one scene in the book where Mickey, who's married to this woman, had this incredible fight, and, you know, it just sort of needed to be explosive, you know, the fight needed and the dialogue needed to be explosive. And it was one of those things where I was actually angry when I was writing it because I needed to feel it. You know, I needed to feel it.
Well, You certainly did, and you make us feel it. And I think you've done something absolutely wonderful with this first of what I know will be many novels. But you know, take your time, and I know the next one is going to be just as great. But it's just so wonderful that you have this really brilliant mind that you can put a story together like this. And I, of course, I knew the minute as I'm reading it, I knew it was going to be optioned, and I knew somebody's going to make a film out of it. And I was sorry that it wasn't me working on the hired to do this script, because that's the most important. I just pray. You know, that because you are powerful. That's one of the wonderful things about coming to it at your stage in life, because you are important and because you have important people behind you. They will treat your book with respect, because too often it happens where, unfortunately, and I've done it myself, where you take a book and you just like do whatever you want with it. But in this in this case, I think because of who you are, and because of your friends, and because of Liz Smith, and because of all the wonderful people around you, they'll do your book justice. Because it's not just a sort of a catty story; it has depth, and that comes through in your writing, in the writing about race and about, you know, the power struggle. So you have depth in your book that I hope that they will carry into the movie, so that the movie will be a real winner. And I'm sure there are already women out there who are ready to get into real cat fights to get a part in this. I mean, this will be your next book, the cat fights of going on in Hollywood at this point, where everybody's got your book now. Everybody's reading it over there. I mean, I'd love... Oh, my goodness. I wanted to say something. Rita's here in the studio with me. Now, Rita is a local author, and she writes here in Clearwater, Florida. And it's absolutely, you know, a gorgeous place to write a book.
It is.
It is. It is. But, Rita, I want... What do you like to be called? Do you like to be Richard, or is Rick? What do you like to be
Richard,
called?
Richard.
Okay, we're very far. It's like my son. When he was little, he was Danny. Then he became Dan, and then he became Daniel. Yeah. Okay, Richard. Richard, just tell us a few of the places where you wrote this book.
Okay.
Make
yes.
us well, envious. You know, make us
tell us the process.
Well, you know, it's funny. I wanted to thank people at the end of the book, but I also wanted to thank the places, the people that I meet. And I have a very high-low love of places. So, like, you know, and that means that, you know, I do a lot of my writing in Irish bars in New York, and, you know, there's a place called the Thirsty Scholar on the Lower East Side, and, you know, and I'll go and I'll have a beer and I'll write. But then I get to go, because of what I do for work, and, you know, where I'm traveling around the world, I get to go to some of the really more glamorous places. So, you know, I wrote part of the book at GoldenEye, which is, you know, the former home of Ian Fleming. He wrote all the Bond novels there, and it's owned by Chris Blackwell, the famed music legend who founded Island Records, discovered Bob Marley. And I sat at, I wrote the prologue of the book in GoldenEye at Ian Fleming's desk, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And that's part of the reason I went into a trance. And the Kusi Sana Hotel in Capri, and the Beverly Hills Hotel in Los Angeles, and the Hotel du Cap Ferrat. I mean, so I get to go to really fun places.
Yes, I'm really good. And I was looking at the list, and I said, "Well, okay, I've stayed at several of them. Beverly Hills Hotel, I've stayed there, and of course, you know, it's so funny. I'm thinking, you know, wow, this is inspiration just to be sitting around in these places. But you've and Claridge's, and I stayed in Claridge's, so I've done two out of the whole
right.
list. So it's pretty exciting. Well, I think, but I know right now at the Beverly Hills Hotel bungalows.
Yes, yes.
They are all sitting around today, reading your book. The ones who couldn't get an advance copy because it's just released, and they're all sitting around, and they are look and they're holding it up because, it, as I said, the cover is beautiful. It says Rouge, and now they are now starting to fight. Who is going to get a part in this? Who is going to play these women? And of course, we have different ages. They start off young, and you know, I think some of the young actresses say, "Oh, grow old for this. You can age me," because the parts are going to be just the hottest thing going on in Hollywood right now.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, it's so fun to be able to write characters. I mean, I'm thrilled that, you know, cause there are a lot of times where female actresses say there aren't great roles, you know, for them at a certain age. And I was really happy that, you know, these are powerful women. These are beautiful women inside and out. And I just love the fact that, you know, that there will be these characters created so that, you know, women can really show the depth of what it really took to be, you know, an incredible businesswoman at a time when, you know, when most women weren't working and what they had to, you know, overcome. And so I think, you know, I love the richness of that is going to be really fun for me to see, you know, when it really becomes a reality. I'm proud of that. I'm really proud of that.
Well, you've done a great job. And the name of the book is Rouge. The author is Richard Kirschenbaum. Do you have a website or where do you like
yes,
people to...
Yes, I have Instagram, Richard_Kirschenbaum. It's K-I-R-S-H-E-N-B-A-U-M. It means cherry tree in German. So I'm Mr. Cherry Tree. And but it's a hard... it's not like Smith, so it's not easy to spell. But yeah, I think people can find it on Amazon under Rouge.
People can find it. But all they have to type is Rouge, and it's going to be everywhere. It's going to be a bestseller. And as I said, if they do the movie the right way... You know, if they turn it into just a catty little movie, no one will win an Academy Award. But if they do it the right way, in sort of the Betty Davis, Joan Crawford style, if they do it the right way, we have some really Oscar-winning roles in this book. So, stay on top of them. Make them do it right. Because
yeah, well, you so nailed it. You so nailed it because Sony said they thought it was like a contemporary, not a contemporary, but it was the next All About Eve. That's what they said.
And you completely nailed it. That is a book that's the movie I was thinking about. Oh, my goodness. I want to be invited to the premiere of this film. You know,
I will make sure you come.
Oh, just invite me because I love this book. I'm going to be promoting this book, and not just on today's show. I'm going to be talking about it on a lot of shows all summer long because I think it's a terrific summer read. I will read it again in the winter, but I will be promoting it on every program for the rest of the summer, okay?
You are so delightful and so kind, and I really appreciate it. So thank you so much for having me on the show. And, you know, it's just so nice to get, you know, it's so gratifying to hear that you like it when you put yourself out there. So I really, really appreciate it.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, Richard, thank you so much. It's been a joy to talk to you. And I'll see you at the premiere, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All the best. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Woo! That's the book. It is so good. Oh, it is so good.
It makes me want to read that book.
Well.
I mean, it really does. It's...
Well, here's your copy. You can have it.
Well, thank you.
And I got more. And because...
Thank you.
This is a book.
Oh, it is a beautiful cover.
It is a beautiful cover, isn't it?
Yes.
And
yes.
He is absolutely delightful. And when we're talking about a first book...
Yes.
When it is so perfect, I was reading and I was thinking, wow. You know, you know what happens.
And for you to say that, because you've read
zillions
of books, you know.
And I get, you know, and it's funny, I've been getting so many books, and recently I got 8 books all in one day. And I started reading them, and people will say, you know, when you have, you know, like, why do you always say something nice about a book? Well, I don't have people on. I don't do books that I don't like. And I had a bunch of books, and some were either the characters didn't get me. If I don't go beyond really too much beyond the first chapter, but when you have, as I said in this, and the prologue is just so good. I'm like, I love this prologue, and it's exciting.
And you know, I truly believe that because I've been working at this craft now for a little while, trying to learn as much as I can, and I keep coming back to this, and it's exactly what you are talking about, that if you write it they will come.
That's
number one. You have to write it.
Now, do you realize we didn't do any commercials? And Big Ed in the control room, we're going to do the commercials, and then we'll be back with Rita Marot to talk about House of Xenia.
That's exciting.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest here in the studio. It's so exciting to have Rita Marot with me. Oh, Rita, let's get to you now. I know I spent a little bit more time with Richard about his book,
but
Rouge.
I was fascinated.
Isn't it? You know, sometimes you just get an author whose book, like your books, when I started reading your series, I just fell in love with your character. I just got a kick out of her. And you have to tell us about how you develop your character and who she is, because MC is a great character.
You know, and we were just listening to your interview with Richard. It's as if they just come to life and they just take over. They take over the page. And MC Mahoney, Mary Catherine Mahoney, she's maybe a little bit of me, but a fictional me.
A beloved former IRS agent.
Yes, I will say that. And she uses her, I would say, her accounting skills to solve mysteries, murders, looks for things. And she also has a little bit of psychic DNA that helps her out. So she's an interesting character. And then as she went along, her family came along. It was like the big fat Greek wedding family. Her Aunt Sophia, Aunt Anna, and I came from that family. So they kind of leap off the page and take over.
They certainly do. And as you know, my sister, Natalie, who is a connoisseur of cozy mysteries, the first time she read your book, she said, oh, my goodness. And she said, oh, this Rita Marot is so good. I said, yes, she is.
And you know, I am so honored because I think the first time I came to your studio and I have to thank you. I have to thank you for interviewing me. I'm a little chihuahua in this big world. And you interview all these great authors that live in my Kindle, but you also help us local authors. You know, it's tough. So I appreciate that, and thank you. And thank you to Natalie.
Well, it is difficult, especially for indie authors, people who publish on their own. It is very difficult, even with major publishers. Now, you know, Richard Kirschenbaum has a major publisher, and he knows people in New York, and he was already, you know, a big business guy. He's now, you know, in his 40s, but he has a major business, and he knows the advertising world. So he's got, you know, that those connections. But for most authors, even with other big publishing houses, if they don't live in New York, if they're not part of that community, they're on the outs too. And everyone needs help in getting their books promoted. Everyone needs this opportunity. And that's why what you do, you do our book buzzes, which, you know, are so helpful.
Radio Rita does.
Radio Rita. That's right. She does these book buzzes for us. And the reason I want to do these for authors is that they can use it at any time on their web pages. Because you have to keep reinforcing. One of the things in this business, you need name recognition. You have to keep getting your name out there so that people will, you know, it's like you hear Mary Higgins Clark.
We know.
David Baldacci. You know.
Yes.
So people need to hear this over and over. And that's why the book buzzes help authors. They can put them on their web pages. They can put it on and say, oh, well, here's a book buzz from 3 months ago. Or maybe a book that, you know, was three books back. To remind people that there is a book.
Yes, yes. And that is very, very true. That is very, very true. And you know, the Mary Higgins Clark, you know, the premier authors of the world, we know their name. We know their name. But we don't know Rita Moreau. We don't know other... Yet. We don't know other indie authors. And you really need to continually to do exactly what you said. And you really need to continually write. You just can't... it's not a hobby. It has to be a business.
Oh, and that's... Yes. Unfortunately, for some authors, when they first start off, they don't realize it. I mean, you have that fun, I have an idea, I have like Richard started. He sat down and he wrote the prologue, and he had the idea, but he had to continue it. And that's what, you know, so many times authors will, like, I wrote the book, and then what I'm going to do with it. And you could be at a major publishing house or a small one like Kensington, for example. Kensington is a great publishing house.
Yes.
And Carol J. Perry, another local author, is with them. Mm-hmm. And she just got another book deal.
Oh, great.
And so, you know, she's going to be up to 12 books. And when I met her, she was on her first book. That's, you know, four and a half years ago now.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting to see how the authors are growing and how they, you know, are getting out there. They're getting recognized. Like Carol J. Perry's books are on end caps at Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
And now you publish indie, but you're going to go now try on a new series?
I'm hoping to. I have published four books in my series and a novella. And I am thinking I would like to try throwing my hat into the ring.
Because it's not easy. It's not easy to find an agent. No. Definitely not easy. And sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily need an agent because there are authors out there who have, you know, sold 2 million books as indie authors.
Yes.
And it's just a matter of persistence.
Yes.
You have to, as you said, a business. You have to have the writing side of you and just love that part. When you're doing it, love it, enjoy it. And then when you have to step back.
And that's the amazing thing. You write a book, and then you're like, oh my goodness, there it is. I wrote this book. Well, if you're an indie author, that's just the beginning. Then you have the marketing. You have to become adept at social media. It doesn't mean just because you might have a publishing house behind you that you're not going to be required to do all these things. Because nowadays, unless you're one of the big boys or the big girls, you are required to get out there and shake the bushes.
Oh, even the big ones.
Yes.
As a matter of fact,
yes.
The minute, it's like in any business, if you're not willing to get out there, your bosses aren't going to support you.
You have to. I mean, I don't know if the days of it used to be like that. Oh, I just want to write. Well, all writers would just like to write and have somebody else do all this other stuff for them. But that's not going to help. It's not going to work.
Yeah. You're lost in the whole big forest of all the books that are out there. So it's up to you. Now, you've learned over the past few years.
You're
active. Tell us some of the ways that you're getting out there. You mentioned when you started, were you shy about getting out there and talking?
You know, I am a retired CPA with the IRS, and I was an appeals officer, so I enjoyed that job. I was the one somebody came to talk to, kind of help them settle out of court. So I wrote my first book, and I think one of the very first things I learned was you really do need a good editor. You need a good editor. And then as I went along, I realized you need more than a good editor. You may need a couple beta readers, somebody that reads behind the editor. You need a lot of eyes. And as far as marketing, marketing is a huge part of an author's life. You have to become adept at social media. You have to become adept at advertising on Amazon, doing Facebook ads. All these things are time-consuming, but you have to bite the bullet and learn.
Because, one, there are so many possibilities, but also you get inundated with ideas, and it's hard to pick through because the minute you become an author, they start sending you emails, and they start wanting you to do this and wanting you to do that. And you have to be really careful. First, if you're going to spend money, be very careful, right?
Yes. Yes, you do. And you do have you do have to spend money, but you have to be very careful. And if I go to my email, I will have, I'm exaggerating, 100 emails from folks looking to spend money with them. Some are good, some aren't so good.
And it's difficult because we've had, you know, I've had some experience here now at Joy on Paper with local authors who will tell me really sad stories about, you know, hiring somebody to do their PR for them. And it is, you know, in the end, you really have to do so much of it yourself. Before you pay anybody money, you really have to check them out.
You have to beware. And it's like everybody's dream is possibly, maybe to have my book on the big screen. Well, there are some folks out there that might reach out to you that, for money, promise you to try to get your book into the big screen. And that's
not the way it's done. I know it.
Yes.
And even simple things like somebody who will write a press release for you.
Yes.
Press releases, it is an art.
It is.
To do a fine press release that will get picked up is a real art. And there are people out there who just want to make, you know, a little money, and they might have some writing, but they don't understand. Press releases are also business. It's not a matter of just writing a press release. It's getting it out to the right people.
And not only the press release, your sales page on Amazon, that's an art. Copywriting or that's totally, advertising writing is totally different than writing a fiction. Totally different.
Absolutely. And again, unfortunately, you know, it's hard work.
I mean, it is hard work.
You know, writing is...
It's hard work, and you have to keep at it every day. And the reason I'm writing is because I retired, and I looked around, and I said, okay, so what am I going to do now? I live in this beautiful postcard, but I had to do something with my head. And I've always wanted to write, so here I am. I'm writing.
Well, and it does open up so much to you, you know, the fun thing is that you get to go out there, you get to meet people, you do events, do you do some of the conventions, some of the book gatherings?
I was very fortunate, and you and I last year went to BoucherCon, right here in our backyard. I mean, wow.
And wasn't it wonderful to meet people?
It was.
To just be part of the excitement of being in the author community.
Yes, yes. And I'm always amazed at our well-known authors, how friendly they are.
Oh,
I mean, they take the time to chit-chat with you. And I'm like, you know, I'm like a fangirl, you know, like, wow, that was Lee Child.
Yeah.
That was Tim Dorsey, you know.
My goodness, yes. Yeah. I think you were hugging Tim Dorsey right there.
Well, I think you were.
I did, too. Well, I hugged everybody.
If they're good looking.
That's right. Oh, boy. Yeah. There were a few that I really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had, and one of them was John Gilstrap, and he's going to be here on July 2nd.
Well,
he was wonderful. He's a fantastic author. I'm so looking forward to having him, but of course he was at BoucherCon. But it is wonderful, and it's wonderful to meet fans. And of course you have so many fans. And where is this event?
Your event coming? I do. I'm having a book launch, so to speak, at the Indian Shores Library. The support group there have been phenomenal. And this Thursday, June 27th, we are having Happy Hour with the Author. I'm going to be talking about my latest book, The House on Xenia. And I'm looking forward to it. And I always like to give back with my writing. So the proceeds from the sale of my books will go to the library.
And The House on Xenia has the entire contingent of your Wild family?
They do. They do. It does. It does. It does. And it's added a little bit more. I started writing these books. I always have an underlying theme. And in this book, it was the strength of a single mother. Actually, the strength of all mothers. But my mother was a single mother in the 1950s. And I actually grew up on a street called Xenia Avenue. So I think we all remember the house we grew up on. I certainly remember the house I grew up on Xenia Avenue, and those homes built you. You know, those homes built you. So that's the underlying theme. And in the house on Xenia, I have a house who is a character, and that house can talk to you. And so we were talking about craft. I did learn something along the way. I believe in theater it's called the fourth wall. You may see it say, for instance, The House of Cards, when that Frank Underwood turns to you and speaks directly to you. So I utilize that in this book. It's from theater. It's the wall in front of the audience and the stage. So the house speaks to you.
And it's a great read, and I can recommend it. I would recommend it. And my sister, Natalie, the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, highly recommends it.
Well, then my job is done.
Okay. Well, Rita, I'm so happy that you joined me here today at the studio.
Thank you.
Everybody, it's at Indian Shores Library on June 27th at 6 p.m.
And yes. Do
you have a webpage you want to tell people about?
Very easy, ritamoreau.com. And in July, something I learned along the way, I am having a virtual book tour. This is something that authors do online, social media, and that is with Great Escapes Virtual Book Tours. So it's somewhat different than the traditional.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. Okay, everybody, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video.
It's my dream.
A dream. That's a dream come true. Or like for Robert Kirschenbaum here and his wonderful book, Rouge. It's going to be a major motion picture. Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
And I was thrilled to talk to him today and thrilled to talk to Rita Moreau in the studio. As I don't have to tell her to do a page a day because she does a page a day, I'm sure. she's at it all the time. And again, thank you so much for joining me today in the studio. Meanwhile, everybody, say something nice to somebody. And we're going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
He saluting us, and I'm saluting him because I should have been a general. I would have loved to be a general. I love ordering people.
General on board.
I love ordering people around. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.